And welcome to the McLeod's Daughters podcast, where two romance authors go episode by episode through the Aussie TV drama McLeod's Daughters. My name is Jessica Kate. I am one of your hosts, and I am here with my co-host, Rachel Hauck. How are you today, Rachel?
I am good. How are you? What's new?
I'm good. And I'm excited to talk about drama is hitting new levels on Drover's Run at the moment.
I know, really? Like, what is happening at Drover's Run?
This really started to suck me in here. This episode came out on the 15th of May, 2002, and it is called the Bridal Waltz. And it's the synopsis on IMDb says, Harry guilt trips Becky into telling Claire that Peter is married. Liz tries to reconcile Harry and the boys. Tess decides to leave Drover's Run and work in the cafe with Simon and Bryony. Now, those are all big things happening with every different character.
Huge things are happening. Huge things.
Huge things. And I mean, I guess the synopsis is actually kind of giving away the things that happen at the end of the episode, because most of the episode is really building up to Becky finally telling Claire. It's not like it happens at the start and then we spend the episode, as you like to say, drop the bomb and then watch the shrapnel.
Right.
It's like a big build up to the bomb, and then more next episode, it's kind of more of the shrapnel. So if people were, I guess, watching their TV, reading their TV guides at the time, they might have been like, oh, spoilers, guys.
What's happening in here?
Yeah. But we open up with we seeing that Drover's Run is in the flurry of preparations. Peter has asked Meg to make Claire's favorite dinner, and all the girls are speculating about whether or not he's going to propose. And Tess is looking much less enthusiastic about these speculations than Jodie and Meg. And very quickly, we jump straight into seeing Claire and Peter at this dinner. Peter has scrubbed up good. He's looking very smart in his button-up shirt, and Claire is wearing this light blue halter top that is very different to what she normally wears on the farm. She's got her hair is curled. She's got her makeup on. She's looking good. They've got candles. He takes out a jewelry box out of his pocket. And you know, he kind of pulls out. And at this point, it looks very much like he's proposing. Now, we know that he's married, so he can't be proposing, surely. And she says... She looks at the box and she's like, I don't know what to say. And now, correct me if I'm wrong here, Rachel, but in movies and TV, when a man pulls out a box that looks like a ring, but you don't know yet if it's a ring, is I don't know what to say, like the line that every female character responds with in those movies.
Yes, yes.
Because as soon as she said that, I was like, ah, can someone think up a more original response? I mean, I guess it's hard. You don't want to be like, oh, my gosh, you're prepared. You don't want to jump in too much yet and make an assumption. It's a hard thing to respond to. Don't get me wrong. But when she said it, I was kind of like, ah, I wanted something, like, surprising there maybe.
Well, she thinks she's going to be a bit more clear, she's gonna propose.
Like, what are you doing?
Doesn't she think he's going to propose?
I was trying to tell in this scene.
I think it would have been like, oh, Peter, just that. And then he gives her the box. But I kind of like the way this played out, is that she didn't seem disappointed that it was a necklace. She really wasn't expecting a proposal, which
my next comment is
good.
He opens up the box. It's this ruby necklace. And he puts it on her neck. And I wrote here, I can't tell. Claire doesn't seem disappointed. So I don't know if Claire had assumed this was a proposal. She doesn't. I think maybe the others assumed it and she didn't. And she's just happy to have a necklace. She had a moment of hesitation when she went to take off. Apparently the necklace she wears now is like one her dad had given her, but she was like, no, take it off. Yours is even more special. Then Peter says he wants to spend the rest of his life with her. But she's like, that's all I want too. And he goes, oh, I just need to sort some stuff out first. And then I'll be back for good. And he's being really vague about it. And I was like, because I knew he was married, I was like, Claire, is this not a warning sign? But then I realized that at this point, she thinks that the stuff he has to sort out is actually buying a ring. And I was like, ooh, that actually makes sense.
Right. Yeah. So I liked how this played out. I just felt like it was realistic and then we're not dealing with some kind of false disappointment or a real disappointment. And it seems really true to where they are in their relationship So then, but then he follows up with, I want to spend my life with you. And so she knows where this is going, which yes. I think is what she wants.
She does. Now I have to say at this point, now we've kind of gone from them getting together not that many episodes ago. Then they were sort of, he was visiting sort of a lot of weekends, but he wasn't at Drover's all the time. Now it seems like he's almost living at Drover's. And when he comes back, he plans to actually live at Drover's. It feels like this relationship has happened pretty fast. And it also feels like at the start of the show, when they were first sort of flirting, we would see them, they would both be up at night and they'd eat ice cream together and they'd talk about their problems. Like there was an actual friendship and relationship there. Ever since then, to tell us that Claire's in love, all we've seen is her acting really sweet and sappy, and we haven't seen
a little goofy.
Yeah, we haven't seen those moments of genuine friendship that we still see between, say, her and Nick, where they're fighting over water and then they sit down and say, no, our friendship's more important than the water. Let's work out this problem. Like a moment of honesty between friends. We don't get any little hints of those between her and Peter anymore of actual relationship goodness. Yeah. And I think that's part of what I'm missing here. Like I think I'd be a lot more sold on them if I saw some of that real friendship and connection. But right now, all I'm seeing is like a wild infatuation gotten out of control, I think.
I'm sorry, I'm watching here. Okay, go ahead.
It's sorry, catching up there. Rachel always watches while we chat, guys, so we can make sure we don't miss anything. And now we cut over to Kalani. It's daytime now. Terry's there. He's saying it's so hot you could cook a chop on your hat, which I thought was a very original metaphor. whenever we're writing stuff in books, we're always trying not to say things like, oh, it's hot as blazes or whatever, because that's like so cliche. And I was like, that was a really good one. That was like original. Cook a chop on your hat. I like it. Anyway, well done.
Yeah, it was good.
They're talking about him checking the fence. He won't, because Harry's lost some stock over to Wilgul. He won't ask the boys for his stock back. He's too proud. Liz gets mad at him. She's like, I could apologize for you. You know, you're good at getting other people to say what you won't say. I like seeing her stand up to him. I think if Liz doesn't stand up to Harry, then we're in danger of this relationship getting straying towards possibly like kind of emotionally abusive territory. But because Liz is obviously confident enough to really give it to Harry as good as she gets, that puts them on a little bit more equal footing and kind of evens out their power a little bit, I think, in this relationship. He's being stubborn. He won't do what she wants, but she's definitely going to get a word in.
Yeah, I feel like, I don't know. I feel like Liz does stand up to him. Mm. I like their relationship. I don't think he bullies her too much because mm-hmm. she's in past episodes, she's given it to him. Yeah. So, but she also loves him. So yeah. I think it's a great picture of two people who are strong, and one of them's a little bit of a bully, but the other one doesn't let herself get, you know, Liz doesn't let herself get walked over, but yet they do love each other. And there are moments where they're like, I'm sorry, I need to humble up kind of moments, even though maybe those exact words aren't said. So it's a good kind of duking it out relationship.
I think so. I don't think that like, despite all the terrible things Harry does, I don't think that it's a case of like him and Liz are not the right people for each other. I think him and Liz are the right people for each other, and their relationship, Harry is just unfortunately making choices that make their marriage a lot harder than it has to be. It doesn't mean it's the wrong marriage. Like, and if he would just make healthier changes, they would have a fantastic marriage. It's actually really well suited. So I like seeing that. I think it's interesting. I think it's an interesting dynamic to explore.
I do too. Yeah, absolutely.
So now Claire is making out with Peter, saying goodbye. Becky is raking and unhappy watching it. And all the other girls are crowded in a window behind Becky also watching it, but they are speculating on her, on like, you know, when they're going to get engaged and stuff. And as soon as Peter drives away, all the girls like run out to Claire and go, show us, show us, show us. You know, they talk about thinking he's gone to suss out the ring. Becky tries to kind of ask Claire, has he just left on business or was it something else? And Claire kind of doesn't pick up what Becky's putting down, and there's a bit, and she just goes off. Meanwhile, Becky goes down and talks to Craig. Craig is now doing the mail. She asks about Peter's mail. He says it's forwarded from Queensland, and he mentions the suburb, which gives her a little piece of information. Then Jodie comes down and asks Craig out on a second date to the movies. Now, I wrote here, the movies, where are the movies that these guys
I thought that too. I'm like, where are they going to the movies? No one has gone to the movies.
Yeah, there's no movies in their nearest town. So maybe at Fisher, there could be movies. Fisher is 3 hours away. That's a long way for a date. I thought that was interesting. But anyway, apparently there's movies. Now, Becky, smart Becky, I like this. She is not just going to plunge into this situation without doing some research. So she rings up information, I think, which I don't even know if information exists anymore now that we've got like Google and smartphones and stuff. But anyway, she rings up information and she asks for Peter Johnson, or rings up like the Yellow Pages or whatever, asks for Peter Johnson in that suburb. And there's two P. Johnsons, and the first one is the wrong one. Then she rings back and the second one, the wife, answers. And Jody asks, she says, oh, I'm looking for Peter Johnson. Are you his wife? And she says, yeah, he's away on business. And that's when you go, ooh. Like she yes. said, I mean, it is true. They have kids together, so they could be separated and he's just come back to see the kids and they're staying in separate rooms in the house or something. But I have to say, it sounds like they're not separated.
Yeah, it does. But we don't really know.
We don't really know.
We don't really know.
They might not have told the girls yet.
Yeah. Yeah. So we don't really know, but yeah,
mm-hmm.
I'm still open to like, it could be a sister.
It never even occurred to me that it could be a sister. I mean, at this point she's asked, are you his wife? And she says, yes, I think. And the next time she answers is Mrs. Johnson, or Claire asks Mrs. Johnson. And
no, she doesn't say, she goes, are you his wife? And she said, who wants to know? And she hung
up.
Yeah,
that's true. She said, who wants to know? That's true. A weird little thing that I just noticed in the background of this is that the wall in front of where Becky's talking on the phone, there's a commemorative Charles and Diana wedding plate on the on the wall.
I love that. Yeah, I'm seeing it right now, actually. Yeah, and there's a plate above it, is the Queen's, you know.
Yeah, it looks like a silhouette, sort of a very, you know, old England type looking thing. I just there thought that was go. A cool little detail.
Well, you are part of the British Empire.
Yep, we are. And I don't know, like a little, that was a marriage that, you know, by that 2002, that was all over. You know, Diana was born and had in fact passed away by that point.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
They're talking about a marriage that's splitting. Like, I was like, has that always been on the wall, or was that a part of, and I mean, it's also a thing, you know, old country, like it's more so you conservative old country people who might be interested in that. Although honestly, I don't know many Australians who have like commemorative royal stuff. That's more of a British thing, I think, but there could be some Aussies who do, especially like you sort of old country grandmas. So
yeah, but if for some reason they put it on the wall, so there you go.
I haven't bothered to take it down in like the years since they broke up or anything.
Yeah, since they bought that place.
Yeah. So now Jody walks in. She's all happy about her relationship with Craig. And Becky says, if someone was cheating on you, would you want to know? And Jody's like, what? And then Becky kind of goes away and Jody's very suspicious. Now, I thought at this point that Jody would have worked out that it was Claire, because there is only one relationship on this farm apart from Jody's 2 weeks of dating Craig, which I don't even, they've been to the movies once and she's asked him to go back a second time. I don't even think that you could call that, like, I could, at this point, you couldn't call Craig Jody's boyfriend. It's been,
no,
it's been one date.
Not at all. They've so one date.
I would think it's very obvious that Becky's upset about Claire, but Jody, self-centered teenager that she is, immediately thinks that Becky is talking about her relationship with Craig.
I know. And what's weird is, I think Becky tries to tell her, no, I'm not talking about you, but she won't believe it.
Yeah. Yeah. She's, of course you're talking about me. Who else exists in the universe?
Right. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. So meanwhile, Meg's vacuuming. She finds some gross old man socks underneath her bed and she gets all nostalgic about Terry. And then Claire, meanwhile, is trying on her mother's wedding dress, which is in fact her grandmother's wedding dress as well. And it is very elegant, classy, the kind of thing that, you know, in 2002, it's not the fashion that was in fashion then, but, you know, with a few alterations, it would be a very classic looking dress that you could really wear in any decade, really.
Well, she says it was her mother's and grandmother's.
And grandmother's, yeah. And
but I'm telling you, it looks exactly like the dress in the movie The Proposal.
Yeah, that was it reminded me of too. Yeah, it looks very much like the dress from The Proposal. And I mean, the dress in The Proposal is allegedly Betty White's wedding dress. So if it was Claire's grandmother's, like maybe that is, they're both accurate to that time period, because they That I when I saw so. It, that's immediately what I thought of.
When did Betty White get married? Okay, Rachel, we'll look to see when Betty White got married.
Meanwhile, Meg is talking to Tess about, you know, you're going to be a bridesmaid. It'll be nice to have a guy in the house. Although, you know, guys will do drive you nuts. And Tess kind of picks up that Meg is missing Terry. And Tess brings up for the first time that she's probably going to have to move out of the big house because when Peter and Claire are married, they're not going to want her little sister living in the house with them, which is fair enough. Meanwhile, Liz comes and visits the boys who are, oh, this is a scene where they're loading those heavy sacks of grain or fertilizer or something like that. And I was like, I just love watching them work like this. And they're always doing it together. Like they just, you know, it's a big farm. They could be working on opposite ends of the farm. And I know for the scene, they're
right.
But I just get the sense that they just have so much more fun doing it together. So they do everything all around the place. And they look up and they're like, oh, Meals on Wheels. And I thought, oh, typical boys. They've moved out of home. They see mum's come to visit and they automatically assume, oh, you ripper, mum's brought us some food.
And she has. That's she just has. Yes.
Like, what? So yeah, they're right. Like she has brought them food. It's completely accurate. And it made me laugh because like this is what my grandmother does for, you know, my uncles all have well not all, but a lot of them have farms very close to where my grandmother lives and she's always sending lunch and stuff out for them.
You know, I'm thinking that this is something that women do and we try so hard to fight quote stereotypes, but stereotypes often exist or cliches in the world because that's what people do. That's what happens.
And especially in this culture, like this very conservative farming, this is a very traditional thing. And like, this is exactly what would happen. It's totally accurate.
Yeah. So it's okay. You're not less of a strong woman if you send food out to your sons or your husbands while they're working in the field. You know, everyone has their role and their part to play, but I understand we all in this day and age don't want it to be the expected thing that happens. And like, that's your job and you have to do it, you know, kind of thing. So,
but I think it's a good contrast. I mean, the show is breaking so many barriers, like with Drover's Run being run by women, that I think it's a good contrast showing like Liz is now the other, she's the traditional, she's not running the farm.
Yes.
She's the traditional housewife and mother. And it's a good contrast.
Yeah. Really good contrast. And it shows that you can be who you want to be and who you are. That was just what I loved about that.
Yeah. If you want to feed everyone, you feed everyone. and the boys are very happy about that. So, well, Nick is very happy. Alex is still angry with his mother. And I thought that was good. And we're going to see that come around later, which is really interesting.
She does go a little overboard when she goes in and starts cleaning the kitchen.
Oh, she's pretty desperate.
Mom, settle down. And again, these are your adult men.
meanwhile,
your adult male sons. Your adult men. Your adult male sons. There we go. Sorry. Moving on.
Jody thinks Craig is cheating. I think it's hardly cheating at this stage of the relationship, but Jody just will not let it drop. Meanwhile, Becky goes to Harry and there's a scene here, which again, as we mentioned in the last episode, these actors in real life are father and daughter. And here they have this scene where they both call each other gutless for not wanting to tell Claire. He makes the point that if you don't tell Claire, who will? It'll rip her and her sister apart. She won't believe Jody. It'll rip her and Meg apart. And Meg is the only mother she has. And he says, and I was like, how hard would this have been to act? Even knowing that you're faking this, he looks her straight in the eye and he says, you don't matter. That's why you have to be the one to tell her. And I'm like, oh, even acting. How do you look your daughter in the eye and say the words, you don't matter? Like, I feel like I hope that before they filmed that scene, he like gave her a hug and said, the next 5 minutes don't count, sweetheart.
Oh, that's so cool. Really? Where did you hear
that? Oh, I didn't read that. I'm saying I hope that that's what they did because that.
Oh, you hope that that's what happened.
I'm imagining if I was having to act with my family and say something terrible to them like that, even acting, it would be hard to say.
Yeah, they're professionals though. You know, they're professionals. Because I'm thinking it'd be hard to be married and be in love with your spouse and then go on set and kiss someone else.
Yeah, that's also
but
true.
That's, it's acting. It's part of the job. And I feel like it's not real. So it's not real in the sense of that's who they are in real life. And so they're playing a part. And I think that's the beauty of being an actor. It's how you know you're a good actor. You can divide those things.
Mm, yeah. Well, they were great actors because they did that really well.
Yeah, I agree.
Now we jump back over to the boys. And yes, I love this because their kitchen is trashed. It looks like when my brother was a bachelor, what his kitchen looks like. And Liz just dives in and is cleaning it up. And I know that you were like, oh, that's going overboard, Liz. I have to say, I don't know a country mother who would not leap into that kitchen.
Of course.
And clean it all up.
Of course.
And also, Liz is just so desperate to get those boys to get back on good terms with them. I think she would clean anything if it would get her back in their good graces. And I think she's nervous, and it's something that's keeping her hands busy as well. So I kind of like that was how it all went.
A little bit, yeah.
And they're falling back in their old unhealthy patterns too. She's trying to say, your dad really cares, but he's, you know, he's so busy. It was wrong. He made it sound so right to do it. And Nick is being really nice to her. Like, he always has a real soft spot for his mum. And she's like, I just want my family back. You know, I don't know. She kind of throws Harry under the bus. She's like, I don't know why I love him. But at the same time, she wants them to forgive Harry. And she kind of gets really desperate and cries and stuff. And Nick is sort of ready to forgive her straight away. And Alex is the holdout. And then he kind of, when she really gets upset and she's like, I just want my family back, he goes over and he gives her a hug. And so I was like, that was nice.
That was nice. Yeah.
Yeah. It was cute. Meanwhile, Jody's talking to Tess. They're speculating about maybe Becky was talking about someone else, but Jody says, no, I'm sure she was talking about me. She can't even look me in the eye. The truth is Becky's so distracted she can't look anyone in the eye right now.
I know, right?
And meanwhile, Simon rings Tess, and Tess gets off the phone and says, oh, Simon needs help with the business. I said, yes, I'll get a share with the business. I'll just be in the way with Peter. Let's not tell Claire yet. I want to wait for everything to be on paper. And Becky's just looking all the more torn up, I think. And so it's like, wow, that was a really fast decision. But part of me was glad she decided not to tell Claire yet, because I mean, when Jody gave up Miss Gungellen because she's going to be with her dad, even though they'd just made the decision and nothing was final yet, I was like, you've moved too fast. In this case, I thought it was the right move for Tess not to tell Claire yet and wait till things were more settled. But I'm about to then change my mind later on that. What did you think about it, Rachel?
I agree. You've called that one. So mm-hmm. We were going to advance here and see what happens next.
Now Tess milks Madonna. She gets a bit nostalgic. She's sad to be leaving. Madonna, of course, is the cow that she's been hand raising for ages. And Jody goes to confront Craig about the alleged cheating. And we just see that very briefly. Then we're back to Tess. She's talking to Claire. She wants Claire to help her churn some butter.
That was good.
You know, most country people, I would say, buy their butter. We're not churning it ourselves. But I thought it was fun that Tess has been having a crack at it. Claire's a bit upset. She says Peter's not coming back very soon. She needs to go and do all the work because he's going to be there to help. And then Becky tries to talk to Claire, tries to tell the truth. And Claire goes, oh, no, I know what you want to talk about. Look, I should have done this ages ago. I'm going to give you a raise.
And I know that was weird.
Yep, that came right out of left field. And now she feels even worse because now she's, you know, she's just been told she's getting a raise and now she's got to be the bearer of such bad news. And at this point, they notice some termites. And I have to say, we talk on this show a lot about animal metaphors are a big thing on McLeod's Daughters. If something's happening to an animal, you can bet it matches the emotional journey of the main character.
Which I applaud over and over. That's hard to do metaphor. It's clever. And whoever writing it, either you're doing it accidentally and know that you do it, so learn to recognize it, or you know that and you're doing it and you're a lot of times when you put in a metaphor, though, it's so obvious, like, here's the metaphor. But they're not doing that. They're just letting it be a natural development of the story. So bravo on that. Yeah. So the tree with the termites.
Tree with the termites. And I was so annoyed at myself because I know that animal metaphors are such a common thing in this show. I try and look out for them. But again, I was like, oh, as soon as we saw the termites here, I should have twigged, but I didn't until later in the episode. And I'm like, oh, I want to recognize them straight away. Anyway, back to Killarney. The cop is there again. He's talking to Harry, now in Harry's capacity as a council member. I did not realize that Harry was a member of the local council, but apparently he is. They're talking about, you know, they want to do some improvements to a dangerous intersection, and Harry's going to take it to the next council meeting. The cop is a bit of a jerk to Terry again, and Terry's sort of being weird. It almost felt like, because Terry's not dating Meg, he didn't have a storyline, but maybe they're contractually obligated to give him a certain amount of lines per episode or something. And
I don't know. That's these weird, weird
interactions with the cop. I don't know. I didn't really get it. Liz comes back. Harry says, oh, how's that sick neighbor you've been visiting? And I thought, oh, has Liz lied to Harry and said she's visiting a sick neighbor and not their sons? That's interesting. But then they make a comment about her doing the boys' laundry. I'm like, oh, so he knows she's been over there. So was she really visiting a sick neighbor? I don't understand the sick neighbor reference anymore. What did you think happened there?
Well, and she says Jill Robinson, so.
Yeah.
So maybe doing she her was. And then he says doing her laundry too. And she said the boys needed a hand. So
maybe
I don't
she
know,
lied at first and just couldn't keep it up.
And then she turns around and tells him, if you went around and said you were sorry, this thing could kind of be over, yeah. You know?
Yeah, I thought that was a bit weird. But anyway, and he's like, no, it's like, oh, he goes, oh, what is this, Chinese water torture? So he's like accusing her of nagging him about the boys. Which,
right, yeah.
Harry,
right.
Such a jerk. And she says, if you do it for nothing else, please do it for me. And I'm like, oh, what's he going to do with that? Because she's the one person that he cares about a bit, but I'm not convinced. Just because he cares about her a bit doesn't mean he cares about her more than his own pride. So I was like,
well,
curious.
But she did. She does challenge him at the end of that scene. Do it for me, and he doesn't rebuff her. He doesn't have an answer.
He's got a bit of a look on his face.
He does. Yeah.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the boys are checking cattle. They find some of their dad's cows. A calf has fallen down a mine shaft, and Alex is like, "This isn't our problem. It's his cow." And Nick's like, "We can't let the cow die because we're mad at our dad." So. On your Nick. Meanwhile, Jody's riding her horse. She goes down and meets Craig at the gate as he's bringing up the mail. She doesn't actually ask him if he's been cheating. She just accuses him of it, has a weird fight, and then dumps him. And I'm like, ah, Jody. I know this was like leading up to something later, but I was annoyed at her for handling it in such an immature way. But it is consistent with her character.
Very consistent with her character.
Yep. Meanwhile, back up at the big house, they're talking about having a wedding at the house. Claire's mentioning how she doesn't even know much about Peter's family. She's going to have to meet everyone. He'll need to meet all her people. Becky keeps trying to tell her, but they keep getting interrupted. And at this point, as a viewer, I was getting frustrated with that. I was like, just let the bomb drop. But then we go and we see Tess goes back over to Nick's place. She finds him he's working at the well. Alex is, not the well, the mine shaft. Alex is down the mine shaft getting the cow. So I laugh because Tess and Nick are like having this serious conversation up on top. And Alex is like unaware of what's happening on. And he just keeps like yelling all these things from down in the mine and getting annoyed they're not listening.
Which I would too. I'm sorry. Why are you guys pausing to have this life conversation while you're trying to rescue a cow and your brother is down the hole? Yeah.
Yeah. So Tess has brought Madonna over to Nick's and they say something about a new home. And Nick says, why do I get the feeling the new home is going to be my home? And Tess says, look, I'm going back to the cafe. And Nick, I mean, we saw last time that she nearly went back to the cafe. Nick was all upset. He whispered stay. He never actually said anything to her about it. But you can see it sinks on in his face. He's like, oh, no, she's really going this time. And meanwhile, Alex is like, I'm ready. And Nick's sort of standing there in a bit of like, how do I react to this? And Alex keeps yelling. And then Nick kind of yells back and it's sort of a bit louder, more angry sounding than normal Nick. Not that he's mad at anyone, but I was like, oh, I got his. I'm feeling the emotional turmoil without him overreacting. So good acting, Miles Collard, great job. And she also says, and he's like, why do I get the feeling that you're going soon? She's like, I'm going tomorrow. And again, Nick doesn't actually do anything, which is, I don't, again, motivations. Why doesn't he do anything? He likes this girl, he's single, she's single. There's not a single reason I know of why he has not asked her out.
No say.
No.
I don't know either. But okay, let's think about this
for a
second. And
they both look sad. Like,
yeah.
They all look really sad, don't they?
he was just dating the brother not too long ago, even though they act like that never happened. She was just dating Alex. She says she's leaving. What can he bring her into? My little shack of a house, the farm that needs so much work. It would take you and me and everybody else to get it all up and running. I think he's thinking, I don't have anything to offer her.
And he still owns kind of farm, determined. And the house is a little bit rough, but I've seen people move people into much, much worse places.
I will say they're standing there talking by a bull or a cow with horns.
It's Madonna, isn't it?
Is it Madonna? That's the
one. I think
so. Yeah.
I think she's brought Madonna over for him to take care of.
And the cow actually reaches out and licks Birdie's hand.
I didn't notice that.
She keeps licking her shirt and her hand. And then she kind of puts her hand on it and she smiles backing up. She had to be laughing.
Yes. That's so funny. They must have. I mean, I remember Posey talking about how hard it was for them filming just with the amount of flies. And now I notice them swishing the flies away all the time. And I'm like, it's so different, you know, people who are filming on, you know, sound stages and stuff. And they must have been like, they were dealing with so many animals and outdoor conditions. And I'm just imagining like the adventure that it was filming this show.
But I love the authenticity of it. So good.
Yeah, that was great. Alex also asked Tess to tell Harry about the cow because the boys still aren't speaking to their dad. Now Craig finds Jody. This was a scene I really liked. Poor Craig, he's been, you know, not pushed around by these women, but he has been kind of jerked around by these women over the last episode. He goes on a date with Jody. She doesn't spend much time with him. Becky makes out with him, but then rejects him. Him and Jody go out, and then Jody accuses him of cheating on her. And Craig is not a pushover. And I like this. He comes, he could have just had gotten his pride hurt, gone home in a huff and forgotten about Jody, but he doesn't. He likes Jody. He's annoyed that he's been unjustly accused of something. And he comes to have his say and fight for the relationship a little bit. And so he's ticked. He gets out of the car. He tells her, you know, what about you? You could be dating a bunch of other guys. I'm not making irrational accusations against you. He lists off all the girls that she mentioned. And he's like, she's dating this guy. She's dating this guy. I don't like that one. Like, you're being ridiculous. And he's so, I don't know, indignant about it. I think she kind of realizes, I was wrong.
Yeah, this is like a really real conversation. What I like about a real conversation in movies and television and life and books is that you get to the details. You don't kind of dance around. No, you dance around things if you got a plot element or a tension element you're trying to drag out. But he just comes up to her and he's like, I dated this girl, but she was after my brother. I dated this girl, but she's after a guy at the bank. I dated this girl, but she's not my type. What about you and Jason and you and Damien? So he's like putting it all on the table. So it's like, you know, we don't know that Jody had these boyfriends, but it's good to, we all can imagine that not every aspect of her life is being filmed for the show.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, this is a real conversation, and he keeps approaching her. She's sweeping the steps. So this is a really good scene and way to go. Good on you, Craig.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And I like that he's mentioned earlier that he's going off. He can't date her on Wednesday nights because he's doing something. And it turns out he's going to TAFE in Fisher to get a certificate in caravan park operations, which is a very specific certificate. I was like, do his parents own the caravan park or something? Like, that made me curious. But anyway, I don't know, that I'm curious about what happens with that. Meanwhile, Claire is planning a party for Peter to meet everyone in the district because she's like, oh, when we get married, he doesn't want to have a bunch of strangers at his wedding. He needs to meet all these people. And, you know, she's worried about the dancing and she's talking to Becky, and poor Becky's just kind of getting tortured by this conversation. And meanwhile, there is, I'm getting lost now in my notes. Oh, Harry comes over. Yeah, Tess takes the cab back to Harry, and he goes and sees the boys. And I think he realizes when Tess brings the cab back that the boys really, really aren't talking to him and they're not coming back. And so he swallows his pride. He does what his wife has asked him, and he goes to talk to them. He asks them while he's there. They talk about cows at first, and it was a very blokey conversation where they're not talking about their feelings. They're just talking about cows. But he does say, have you heard from Claire? and they're like, no, why? And he's like, oh, I thought she might want to come over. And then he says, Peter's married. And the boys are both furious. And this part of the conversation annoyed me. The boys both get mad at him. They say, well, did you tell him? He says, I've got someone working on it. And they both say, like, stuff your dad, and they walk off. And I did not understand why that made him terrible. And I didn't get what they were mad about. Did they think that, because they can't be mad that he's not told her because he's got someone telling her. Do they think he should have just done it himself, or I don't know.
I don't know. I think this whole scenario that we're about to walk through is, I'm going to shoot the messenger. Like,
yeah, I think everyone is mad at the person who tells me the news.
Mm-hmm. And maybe they feel like, remember, they're distrustful of him right now. They think he's pulling games and stuff. So you guys know I'm watching the show. So let me back up. I'm right on the scene. They say, you're joking, right? He goes, no, I wish I was. And then does Claire know? She will. I've got someone working on it, which Jessica just said. And then they're just kind of smiling, like, you can't help but being a bastard dad. That's what Alex says. And yeah, you're right, Alex should have eaten the calf. And then they walk off. So I think they think he's pulling something. And don't eat the calf. Come on, Nick.
And meanwhile, we go back to Drovers, and finally it's crunch time. Claire is leaving this loving message for Peter. Poor Becky comes in, and I liked how she said it, because it's been torturing her, and she doesn't beat around the bush. She just walks in and says, Claire, I need to talk to you right now. Peter's married. I'm so sorry. And I thought this was great acting on Becky's part. I thought that felt really natural, great writing. I thought it was a natural way to just blurt it out, get it over with, rip that Band-Aid. And Claire's reaction here surprised me. I knew she'd be upset, but I think the sudden ferocity of her reaction, I felt, was a bit over the top, even for Claire's character. At first she says Becky's lying. I thought that was a bit... I would have assumed that the person was mistaken. I wouldn't have assumed that they were lying. And then she just, like, screams at her to get out. And poor Becky has handed her the number, and she just runs. And I was like, geez, Claire, like, I know you're upset, but I don't know. What did you think of her reaction?
I know this is the natural way that this story unfolds. And I like this. I thought, great acting here, great lines. I would have loved to have seen, like, what would have happened if she said, yeah, I know. How did you find out? Right?
That would be interesting.
But anyway, this is the more emotionally satisfying one, I think. I think we would have been more like, what? She knew? But this is the more emotionally satisfying. And we like the fact that she didn't know. You know,
yeah, Claire. I like that she didn't know.
We want her to kind of, you know, not be with another man's wife.
Mm-hmm. What did you think about the way she yelled at Becky?
Another woman's husband, I said.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that would have been a very different story.
I like that she, I don't think Claire would purposely be with a married man. So it was probably the best reaction. And I think because this whole storyline is shoot the messenger. And so she yells at her because she's the only one to yell at. Peter's out there. So. I don't have a problem with that. I think that was right. And that's what Becky feared all along. Not so much that she would lose her job or that Claire would hate her. She didn't want to hurt her, and she knew it'd snap back on her. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now meanwhile, Harry goes home to Liz. He's mad because he's been rejected by the boys. He says, I knew this was a terrible idea. And then Meg comes sauntering over to Terry, who is fixing some machinery, and she's talking in her really nice voice. She's got some lipstick on. She hands him his socks. She's being uncharacteristically nice to Terry because she's never nice to him normally. And she's like, oh, I've brought his socks. And when he first says hi, Meg, I was like, oh, Terry's acting very, very casually. Doesn't even seem hurt. And then he gets up, and then he kind of got a bit awkward. So I was like, oh, okay, he was just being friendly. But now it is quite awkward between them. And she's like, oh, here, you know, I've fixed your socks. See, I darned them and I washed them. And he kind of takes the box, and he's like, oh, that's nice. And then he looks at the socks, and he kind of looks at her. And I was kind of like, what's that look on his face? And then he's like, not my socks. And he just hands the box back to her and goes back to fixing the thing. And she's kind of like, you see the realization. I was so shocked. I did not see that one coming. And you see the realization dawn on her face. And then she's like, Kevin. And it's like,
so brilliant. So brilliant.
Ex-husband sucks. That's so bad. I mean, I had thought that this would be the point where Terry starts getting back with Meg, and I was all ready to be annoyed at it because I think she needs to suffer more because what she did was awful. And it looks like she is suffering more. So well done, writers. You surprised me there.
Yeah, I loved it. That was really good.
It was a great surprise. Meanwhile, Tess is visiting her dad's grave one last time before she goes back to the city. She says, you know, thanks for finding Claire a husband. Then she made a curious comment. She's like, you could have found me one while you were at it. And I get that she's feeling lonely, but I also feel like Tess has never actually really been after a husband. She's actively kept any serious relationship at arm's length. And if she wanted a husband, walk next door to Wilgle and say, g'day, Nick, want to go on a date? And she'd have one in about 5 seconds.
5 seconds. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I thought that was a weird comment. But anyway, she says her goodbyes. Then I liked this scene with the boys. They're sitting at home around their dining table, both in shock with the telephone. And Alex wants to ring Claire and tell her. And Nick is stopping him saying, no, we can't tell her. We only have Harry's word for it. We can't. You know, what if it's not true? We can't blow her life up. You know, if we do tell her, she's going to shoot the messenger and we could be wrong. If we don't tell her, we're the months who knew about it and didn't tell her. And so Alex says, we're damned if we do and we're damned if we don't. Nick says, yep. And he just slams the phone back down and Alex says he could kill Peter. And Nick just says, get in line. So yep. I liked how protective they both were. I liked how angry they both were. I liked that they were debating whether or not they should say it or not and whether or not it was true. It was just a great scene.
Very good. Yeah, it was showing their care for Claire as well. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. So I love the kind of protective brother, protective neighbor, and maybe possibly one of us will marry you one day, but we're not really sure.
Oh, yes. Meanwhile, poor Claire, she rides up and says to them that you might have heard this terrible rumor about Peter. She sees the look on their faces and says, you knew? And they're both like, yep. Then she yells at both of them and just runs off. So they don't even have the chance to say, look, Harry told us 2 hours ago, but we didn't know if it was true or not. So we didn't know whether we should tell you. Like, I thought I was a bit annoyed that she just rode off, but I get that that's this emotional state that she's in right now. It's just sort of a pattern that's happening. All the conflicts that are happening between characters are because someone is just walking out of a room very quickly. And I'm like, if you just stay in the room for 5 more seconds, this would have been resolved. It does get frustrating after a while.
Yeah, it does. And you feel like this is a lifelong friendship. And
yes.
You know, why isn't she giving them a little bit more?
And she savagely yells at them. Like,
and this is something I think we all have to learn, is we make these horrible assumptions. And she's not even, and she owes them an apology. I'm sorry. She owes them an apology. She's not even hearing. She's making these assumptions about them. And, you know, we've all done this, and I'm learning so much. Like, I was telling Jessica before, there's some things that have been going on in my life in the last 3 months. And some of them are like, are you asking the right questions? Are you giving things enough time? So, like, you know, she didn't even let them explain. And oddly enough, though, they don't react. They don't go, wait a second here, sister. We didn't know. We just found out ourselves. So I would have kind of liked that. Yeah. A little bit, if there'd have been kind of a, like, we didn't know, we're so sorry. And she might be like,
that's actually a great point. And like you brought up a second ago, one of these boys, our hope is that eventually in the story, one of these boys ends up with Claire and the other one ends up with Tess. Whichever one ends up with Claire, I hope there is a moment where she tries to pull crap like this and she tries to storm out of the room without giving him a chance. And they go, hold your horses and listen to my side of the story. And they just set her straight, not meanly, but firmly, because she needs to learn this. And they need to like pull her up on it as part of their partnership. I think that's something that they need for like the relationship to develop in a healthy manner.
I agree 100%.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, she goes back home and she rings the number that Becky has given her. She's using an old rotary phone, the one that we had when I was a kid in the 90s, and it is excruciatingly slow to watch her dial that number.
That is hilarious. I just wanted to point that out. She is using a rotary phone. So as a little sidebar, and maybe some of you have seen this, there was kind of a video going around where a guy was like, hey, you know, call me. And you know, you do the pinky to the mouth and the thumb to the ear, like, call me, right? So he goes to his kids and he says, hey, pretend you're on the phone, but use your hand. And the kids are like, what? He goes, pretend you're on your phone, but use your hand. The kids look at their hand and then they hold their whole palm.
Yeah, I was going to say their whole palm. Yeah.
Their whole palm up like to their ear. And he's like, argh! You know, so then he goes to another kid. He's like, use your hand, pretend it's a phone. And they're like, what? And they just kind of slowly hold their whole palm against their head. And he's like freaking out because nobody knows thumb to ear if pinky to mouth anymore. It's like, maybe no.
That's funny.
The Hawaiian was that hang loose. Yeah, it was really cute. You guys should look that up. It was really cute.
And she rings the number, and I believe first she speaks to a woman and she says, you know, are you Mrs. Johnson? And she's like, who's calling? And she's like, oh, I'm ringing for Australian Bloodlines. I'm ringing for Peter Johnson and something like that. And Peter answers and it is his voice. So she has confirmation that that woman is a Mrs. Johnson and that this is Peter's house. And she just hangs up. And I was like, ooh.
Well, she doesn't say she's calling for Australian Bloodlines.
She says for business. She or something, says, doesn't she?
She just goes straight to, is Peter here? Which is okay. So here we go. This is exactly what Becky did. Is Peter Johnson there? And she goes, and then she says, are you his wife? And she says, well, who's calling? Now Claire doesn't say that, but she's like, are you Mrs. Johnson? Yes. And then she goes straight to, is Peter Johnson there? Well, who's calling? I just felt like she should have said, who's calling? And then she says, darling, someone's on the phone for you.
That's right. She and does it's, too. So it's like, well, I don't
and it's very, it's very affectionate sounding. So it they're is. Not separated. They're not separated.
Yep. Interesting. And if I was the wife, this is the second woman in a day that has mysteriously rang, asked for Peter Johnson, and then hung up. Like, I would be getting suspicious if I was there.
But then he says, hello. And I couldn't tell if it was Peter or not.
Thought it was his voice. Yeah. And I felt like she recognized his voice.
Then she hangs up. Okay. Can I just say, how dumb is Peter?
Yes.
Darling, someone on the phone for you. Hello. Well, I mean...
At any point in time when he was away on business, Claire could have looked his number up in the white pages and rung him, and his wife could have answered. Like,
okay, my question is, who was she leaving the when she left the message? Where was she leaving that? Where would you would not leave that sappy message on his business line?
So you would true. She'd been leaving these messages on his home phone. He'd have to have a mobile.
Maybe it was a mobile then. Yeah, because he does.
So
travel,
she's always rung his mobile, and she's never rung his home.
Okay.
Phone.
All right, we'll do that.
Yeah, all
I'll right. buy that. Problem solved.
Meanwhile, Jody comes back to gloat about the fact that Craig is not cheating on her. She's talking to Becky and Meg. Doesn't realize that Becky was right. They were just talking about Claire. And I wish at that point that Becky had just turned around and snapped at Jody and said, I was talking about Claire and she's devastated. So just not everything's about you. Shut up and go away. But that didn't happen.
That fits Jody's character.
Yeah,
Jody doesn't want to cause trouble. Jody doesn't want to, she's not interested in causing trouble for anybody.
Meanwhile, Tess finds Claire. They're talking a bit about the termites. And how, you know, they had thought the house was on solid foundations. And that is where it clicked in my notes in all caps. It's got termite metaphor. The relationship has been infected and Claire didn't even know. Tess
and white ants also.
I think white ants are the same as termites, aren't they? I think in Australia people use them interchangeably. Tess tells Claire about the cafe, says that she's going to go. She's talking about, you know, I don't want to be in the way of you and Peter. And Claire kind of realizes that, you know, this had always been Tess's dream. Claire doesn't want to squish that dream by telling her bad news. And so she just lies and says, cool, have fun. I'm happy for you. You know, we've both had such a happy ending. And I was like, have we not done this before? We've seen them having this. This is the exact thing that happened last time Tess nearly left. I was a bit annoyed that we are repeating the same sort of emotional steps because I thought we'd grown past this, girls. But, yeah. That's where we're at. And also, what is Claire's end game? Tess is going to find out soon that her and Peter are broken up. That news will spread like wildfire.
I think she feels like, okay, so here we go. Tess is like, I'm going to go back. They need me. I'm going to be a partner. They're cutting me in. Which, by the way, I want friends like that. Thank you.
Yeah.
And Claire doesn't go, no, wait a minute. What about here? What about your half? What about it? I'm not going to give you any money. There's like zero conversation
about what this is going to the farm.
You still own half of Drover's Run. What? I'm not giving you any money. And she doesn't say, well, who's going to do your work? What are you going to do? Hey, why are you leaving?
Mm.
There's no conversation about, wait, I thought they didn't want you. And what? So now you're just leaving? What's going on? There's no conversation about that.
And like real conflict in a story can't come from people not having the conversation. It's got to come from them having the conversation and them having like opposite motivations or, you know, hurting each other's key flaws in the conversation. But not having it, I feel, is cheating. It's driving me crazy.
Well, yeah. And then she says, well, you don't want, or you're, no married couple wants a little sister hanging around. Here's where you've got to drop the bomb.
Yep.
We're not going to be married. I'm not going to marry. Peter's already married. Mm-hmm. What?
Yep.
Then you just have, what's happening here? But I already told him yes. Well, unyes them. Well, I can't. What? Oh, now we got a pickle. Now we got a mess.
Yeah, and now we're just going to, Yep, I agree. But anyway, they're still not talking. The next day, Tess is packing her car. Claire says she didn't realize Tess was going so soon, so maybe she thought she'd have longer to tell her. Still, they kind of exchange some gifts, you know, well, Claire had given Tess work boots long ago. Tess is taking them with her as a bit of a keepsake. And she gives Claire like a crystal or something. And they have a big hug. And I was just annoyed this whole time that they weren't being honest.
I did like this scene, though. It did have some emotion in it. And it was well
nice
done.
It was nice that Claire showed more emotion than usual. She wasn't pretending. She wasn't sad, you know. So that was good.
Which again, this is all, I don't know why she's letting her go. Like,
no, I just didn't get it.
She works. She's a worker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Meanwhile, like Claire packs the wedding dress away. There's sort of a sad song playing over the top of it all. Nick is on his farm on his bike watching Tess's car drive away. He finally decides to take some action and he races the bike along the fence line trying to chase her down. I don't know what he was going to tell her when he stopped her. I was like, finally, he's doing something. But then the fence stops him and she turns a corner in the road and he can't get to her and she just drives away.
Which I'm like, thinking, why, if you wanted to talk to her, why are you in a fenced field? Why are you not on the road or jump the fence? I don't know. Like, what was he thinking?
Yeah. And then Claire cries some more. She really starts to cry, which I did feel was Claire's whole thing is that she holds her emotions in and that she's cried before in this episode, but you kind of see her sitting on her bed. She's now all alone. The wedding dress is gone. And this is kind of where the dam breaks. And then that's the end of the episode. So it's I said last episode, I thought this was going to be like a two-parter. I thought this episode, she'd find out Peter was cheating. She'd kick his butt out. At the end of this episode, they'd all hug and that storyline would be like wrapped up. But no, this is escalating into like high drama for a big chunk of the season, I think. I think so too.
And I really love it.
Yeah, it's good. I will say, every time I watch these, I normally don't go ahead to the next one because like it's going to be a few weeks until we record again. I don't want to watch it early and then forget. And also I just have other things that I feel like watching. This time I got to the end of this one and I thought I had like 15 minutes before my boyfriend was arriving with dinner. And I thought I need to see what happens to the start of the next episode. So I watched got about half of my notes for the next one already done because I was like, I have to see. So well done, McLeods. You've sucked me in. For all the things I criticize, you got me sucked in. So
we're totally sucked in. It was the same way. I was like, I can't watch another one, but I'm dying to see what happens next. So so well done. You know, it's the job of people who are watching and kind of critiquing a show to pick out all the little things. But whenever I edit someone's work and I redline it like crazy, and I always go, now, don't feel bad. Here's what's happened is you've shown me the story and I have all these ideas that can help you, right? Mm-hmm. That's why you came to me to get help. But like you gave me so much to work with. You've created a world in which I can exist. And that's what, you know, writing novels is all about. You create a world in which other people can insert themselves and they're going to have an opinion about what you've done with the characters, which is really, then you've done your job. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like that's what McLeods has done to us here, Jessica, is that they have created a world, they have sucked us in, we're invested now, and we're going to have an opinion about the way things should be. So it's not so much criticism as like, we're so invested, we have ideas.
Yeah. Yes, that is a great way to put it. I'm so invested that I have ideas. That's really cool. So we're going to have to wait another 2 weeks to talk about what happens next, but I'm looking forward to it already. Rachel, how about you tell folks, if they would like to follow us on social media, where should they go?
If you want to follow me, you can go to Rachel Hauck, HAUCK.com. And then all my social media is there. You can follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Please follow me on BookBub. So that way you can keep up with when I'm releasing a new book, and you can keep up with what's happening.
Yes. If you would like to follow the podcast, you can follow us at McLeod's Pod on both Facebook and Instagram. If you'd like to follow me, I'm at Jessica Kate Writing. I mainly post about movies, books, and TV. It's pretty much exclusively my feed. So you can join us there and have lots of fun. And JessicaKateWriting.com as well to find out about my books, like A Girl's Guide to the Outback and Love and Other Mistakes. And yes, follow us on BookBub. And then you hear about like new books and book deals and stuff. And all that is awesome. We will see you all next episode. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Hey guys, just wanted to say a quick thank you to composer Bobby Abbott for our theme song. If you want to check out more about him, then you can go to Bobby Abbott Music on Facebook, and that's Abbott with 2 B's and 2 T's. See you all next time.